Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 73 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I am your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by a new host, Craig. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Josh.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm coming off the end of like a 2 week brutal cold that had me knocked out and lying on the ground shivering for a full day. So I guess I'm doing better than that.
You know what? I'm glad that you are off the floor and at least partially upright, sitting in a comfortable chair, hopefully.
Yeah, I am probably half upright. I'm sitting down, so I don't know how that technically counts.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a cross-junction section or something.
Ooh, so fancy. So, Greg, why don't you tell people a little bit about who you are, why you're here, why you love Hearthstone?
Okay, cool. Well, me personally, I was born in Jamaica, raised there, bought my first Super Nintendo when I was around 10 years old, and decided, hey, this is what I want to do for the duration, and pretty much aimed myself towards software development. And many years later, I'm working in the medical industry, of all places, and I enjoy playing Hearthstone, because at first it was pretty much a way for me to get over League of Legends, which was a big effort to kind of pull myself away from that. But I've begun to, you know, really get attached to like Hearthstone as a game. I started in around like the second week of Nexdramas, and I've just been loving it ever since.
Nice. So you mentioned you came from League of Legends. So is it the competitive side of Hearthstone that you really like?
I like that you can, like, one of the biggest problems with League is if you playing a game is about like an hour.
Yeah.
And like, for me, one game is never quite enough.
Yeah, so, especially if you lose.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so, you know, or if you have one of those like really bad experiences where you just have, you know, whether you're doing well or badly, or you're winning the game or losing, you can have these experiences with your allies or your opponents where they're just being really, really, you know, just nasty in chat, and then you're just kind of stuck in a virtual room where you're penalized for leaving for about 40 minutes, and you come out of that, you're just like, well, I either want a shower or another game, but something has to wipe away that negative memory.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Hearthstone, it's like, okay, well, the rounds are like, you know, 5 minutes to 20 minutes or so, and, you know, at the end of the game, you know, okay, well, you have control over the interaction as far as, you know, if they're spamming emotes or whatever, you can always squelch. And, you know, you can just kind of sit and enjoy, and, you know, it's turn-based, so I don't, you know, my reaction time isn't as necessary for it. And you're just kind of enjoying yourself and solving the puzzles, you know, turn after turn.
Yeah, I love that, all that too.
Appealed a lot more to me.
So you mentioned the original Nintendo. I learned a very interesting fact, at least to me. Do you know how the light gun works? You know, the light gun you used to play Duck Hunt on the original Nintendo?
I have no idea how that works, and I've always been curious about it.
Yeah, my friend asked me about it, Greg, asked me about it last week, and so I looked it up because I couldn't figure it out, right? Because it's just a stick. There's no, like, camera, right? Because the Wii puts a camera on the TV, and that's how it works, so it makes sense. So how it works is it is just a receiving receptacle. It receives light. And every time you pull the trigger, what happens is the screen for one frame would go black and then put tiny white, well, not tiny, but white squares where anything shootable is.
Oh.
So that for a split second, the gun would say like, okay, do I detect white? And if you did, then it caught something. And if not, then it didn't. It was a very clever solution for a time when, like, they couldn't have done, you know, fancy VR technology or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, that's the big thing. It's the technological limitations of that time. You wonder, like, how do I point this thing at my screen and it knows that I shot that duck?
Yeah. Or that you didn't. The dog can mock you for missing.
Yeah. I just watched that horrible movie, Pixels. I shouldn't bemoan the movie. It had its issues, but seeing that dog again was like gave me so many flashbacks.
I have not seen that movie. Does he show up just to mock you again?
He shows up. He does a little bit of mockery, but you know, it's more of a cameo than anything else.
Oh, okay, that's fun. All right, so let's talk about why we're happy this week
Before
we get into our real topics. Why are you happy, Craig?
I'm happy because this past week I just hit rank 60 with the last few of my characters. So I have nine characters in Hearthstone at rank 60 now. And I have been, you know, in a long process of trying to unload certain boxes that I've been moving around from apartment to apartment. And in my latest place, I've finally gotten rid of all this clutter. And now my space is all open and free and clear. And I can play Wii Fit and Dance Dance Revolution and all these things in my living room and annoy my downstairs neighbors.
That's awesome. Good work. You're living up to the legacy of upstairs neighbors everywhere. It's what you have to do.
Hey, absolutely. Hey, listen, I'm on the top floor for a reason.
you know what happens.
Exactly.
Very cool. So I'm happy I'm feeling better. Also, are you ready for a little heresy?
Oh, okay.
I am happy. Oh, man. Dare I say it? Nobody sending angry letters, okay? I found... excuse me. While I was out sick and couldn't work for like a whole week, mm-hmm. I actually played a lot of Hex. Another card game, online card game that I also really like.
For shame.
I know, but I found my perfect deck.
Okay.
It actually feels like, so when I found the Warrior Dragon C'Thun deck, that deck spoke to me in a way that was very deep and profound, and I'll never be the same person again. And I found my Hex deck that basically speaks to me the same way. It's a Kyoto Cleric Healing deck. Very different, but oh, it was food to my soul while I was dizzy and couldn't see anything. It was great. So I was happy. I actually just posted it on my blog, on the same blog, gamediplomat.com, if anyone wants to check it out, just yesterday. And I was just really happy that I found that deck. It's probably the best deck I've actually ever built in any game.
So it was awesome. Really
fun. Yeah. So that's why I'm happy. Let's talk about some, I don't know, this is not really happy news, but there's maybe a happy outcome in the future. You wanted to kind of bring up this topic?
Sure. So this is related to the recent DreamHack tournament, which was this huge open tournament that had, invitational, had all these, different players from different backgrounds coming in. And there was one particular player, Terrence M., who was notable for two reasons, one very positive and one kind of negative. The very positive reason is that from being a virtual newcomer who was not very well known in the scene, he made it all the way to the second place in this huge, open bracket tournament, demonstrating some very, very solid understanding of the game and, bringing in some very, interesting decks and just playing with some very confident strategies. And the other notable thing was the just tremendous amount of vitriolic, racist, and just discriminatory outpouring from the Twitch chat whenever he was given any attention. And this was very, very unfortunate for for every reason, particularly though, like his I believe his parents, his grandparents, like his family, had were paying attention to the tournament as he was participating. And so, like, it's this kind of, like, mixed sensation of, oh, wow, he's doing so well. And I don't know why all these words are being associated with him right now. Is this what it's like being on the internet and being a gamer? Maybe he should go back to college. I don't know. Like, yeah. Which, no, he's an active student, but still, it was kind of uncomfortable to, you know, deal with. And, you know, it's not a new topic, really. I think it's very important to recognize that this is an issue that, you know, as far back as, like the reason that who I consider to be one of the best Hearthstone players in the world right now doesn't play in the professional scene is from the same reason. Hafu has said several times that it's because of the type of attention that she receives being a public female figure in the gaming world whenever she competes, like, you know, kind of like the pressure and the kind of negative attention that she receives, whatever, she just doesn't want to deal with it at that level. So she kind of just like streams privately and does her own, you know, has her own stream with her moderators and stuff like that. An arena where she's in control and she doesn't have to kind of like be subject to this kind of attention when she puts herself out there on, you know, in competitions and stuff like that. And I don't know, I just find it very, very disheartening that, you know, like there's all these different barriers to people who, I guess, you know, don't look like Forsen or stuff like that. Even myself, I was born in Jamaica. I'm, you know, so I'm not African American, but I'm black. And I'm very afraid to, I tend to avoid using my face and using, you know, anything that's too identifying of myself and my identity whenever I'm online, because I don't want to deal with the small-mindedness. But I still find myself in, you know, these chats and, you know, online discussions and stuff like that where, you know, people are flinging around, you know, racist terms and stuff like that. And, like, I've had the experience more often than not, you know, I've had the experience like several times playing League of Legends, for instance, where I'd be in like a Skype call with a few people and like a few people would join and then there'd be that one guy and you're just kind of sitting there like, oh my God, did he really just say that? And then you kind of call him and you're just like, oh, come on. Is anybody here really black? And then I have to go into, well, I'm black and, you know, the word makes me uncomfortable. And I'd appreciate it if you didn't use it. And then it's like I brought something to the room to bring everybody down.
Yeah.
And not what he did.
Not what he did.
Yeah. So it's a big topic. It's a small topic. It's a, you know, I'm glad that Blizzard has, you know, kind of come out and said, hey, listen, we recognize that this is something that is important for us to address for Hearthstone esports and Blizzard esports to move forward and be taken, you know, more seriously, more, you know, and legitimately going forward. And, you know, it's a much bigger problem than Twitch chat and Blizzard and stuff like that. You know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, there's a lot of these like big social media outlets that are having to take, you know, take stock and take notice of how people are using their platforms for harassment and berating and bullying and stuff like that and responding to that. So I'm glad that we're at a point now where big groups are kind of like paying attention and holding themselves responsible to it. But, yeah. And I really hope that this leads us towards a technical solution, but also leads towards us kind of like holding the people kind of responsible to it so that this type of thing can be really like addressed at the source.
Yeah, I mean, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. People in Twitch chat are saying that because they think it's funny and other people think it's funny. They get a good reaction when they do it.
Right.
And I'm really happy with Blizzard's response to this. They came out and said, you know, they're teaming up with their players, their streamers, their moderators, and also partners. They mentioned Twitch, DreamHack, and others to get consensus and collaborate on what to do differently. It's all kind of vague, but then they mentioned one very specific thing that could be very interesting. They said they're investigating a pilot program that Twitch has in the works to streamline moderation and combat ban evasion. And then they're also updating their partner policies so that anybody that works with them has to follow these checks and balances and repercussions if stuff like this happens in the chat channel. So I think this is actually, it's really exciting to hear Blizzard kind of take a proactive stance and help maybe try and pioneer some ways that, you know, we can combat this sort of thing. I think this is really cool. I think it's really promising. Mike Morhaime, Blizzard's CEO, like, I think it was two BlizzCons ago, he gave this really big statement about, you know, combating online harassment and combating all this stuff in the very opening ceremony of BlizzCon. And so it's definitely something that at least it appears like they take very seriously and they're going to try and fix. So I think this is, it's obviously a very sad moment for the Hearthstone community. That's what we're doing to the newcomers that are doing great in the game. And we're just, it's disgusting, right?
Right.
But it looks like some good may come out of it, regardless of that. That Blizzard's going to hopefully take that and turn it into something good in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being able to say, hey, we're going to take the lessons learned, and this isn't just, you know, oh, boys will be boys. This is, you know, we're going to have an actual, you know, response to this. I think that's a definite step in the right direction.
Yeah. All right. Enough about that. Let's talk about some deck battles, buddy.
Alrighty.
Because that is why we're here today. So for people that don't know, we do these deck battle episodes once a month, usually. The guest host brings on their favorite deck. They break it down for you. They tell you what cards are in it, how it works, why they like playing it, all that sort of good stuff. And then we do a best of three battle against me live on the show. And then the twist, of course, is that I am always using the current reigning champion deck on the show. And that's the last deck a guest brought onto the show and won with. So, let's see, actually. So the defending champion deck this time is Chris's Warlock Dreadsteed deck. So this is fairly recent. It just got on the show in March. So it's only 3 months old. And yeah. Actually, because of all the review episodes we did, I think this will be the first deck battle that it has.
Actually, yeah.
So it had to go through the gauntlet, but it did pretty well. And I've been playing it a bunch over in Wild. And so that was episode 68, if you want to go back and learn more about this on GameDiplomat.com. But, Craig, you're going to be telling us, you built a full guide for the deck. You're going to tell us all the cards, substitute suggestions, advice, all that sort of good stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah, very I put cool. together a guide for the Dragon Priest deck, and I believe that Gul'dan will be brought down by the power of the light.
Now, I don't want to be a downer here. But I logged in this morning before work to get some extra reps in so I could be extra prepared.
Uh-huh.
I played three priests and a freeze mage and went 0-4. So, I'm not feeling great against my chances against priest right now. it's pretty brutal. But, of course, Craig and his deck are fighting to enter the Happy Hearthstone Hall of Fame. So those are decks that have beaten three challengers in a row without losing. Only two decks have done it in the history of the show. Dan Patrice's Beastmaster Hunter deck back from March 2014. And then Andrew Brown's Warlock Demon Zoo deck, which was the reigning champion deck before this one. And so that got in March of this year. So, Craig, how do you feel about your chances? Just right off the bat, do you think you can make it into the Hall of Fame?
I think that this deck is a tricky one to navigate at certain points in the game. So, but I believe that it's a strong deck, it's a strong list, and it will be able to take down whoever comes after it. I say by the end of the year, it's going to be sitting in the Hearthstone Hall of Fame. The Happy
okay.
Hearthstone Hall of Fame.
I like it. I like it. I thought you weren't going to commit to anything. You were taking your time, but you got there. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, so tell me about the theme of the deck. Obviously, it's a priest. It has dragons, I'm guessing.
Yep. A couple of them are in there. But really what this is it's a way that I've found makes priest more playable to me. So I'm one of those terrible aggro players that you know, clogs up your meta and you know, makes the game less fun to play, or so I hear whenever I'm on Reddit. And basically, like, I just really enjoy starting the game when the game starts, as opposed to kind of like waiting a few turns and, you know, before getting into the meat of whatever my deck is trying to do. And, you know, losing to that kind of strategy is, you know, kind of sucks, because it's like, oh, hey, listen, I have this great idea, this great concept for a deck, and you're not letting me warm up into it. You're just dropping your leopard gnomes and such, and you know, doing all these things that kind of like, you know, taking me out of this before I get a chance to get into it. I'm like, yeah, you're playing too slow. You're not... Yeah. You know, you're not taking a proactive stance in winning your game.
Yeah, actually, the most interesting way I've heard someone counter that was saying, like, is aggro cheap, or are you just being punished for being too greedy with your deck build? Which is like, that's interesting, because a lot of times when you're building like a late game control deck, you're like, oh, I just want all the big fatties at the end. I just want all the big bodies. And you get a little greedy. You do. You're like, ah, I don't need a one drop. Two drop, you know, maybe a couple, because I need all these seven drops.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so you like taking down aggro. So this deck is focused on playing stuff early and kind of keeping pace with them and then beating them?
What I'm saying is, like, as the person who's like kind of more of like the aggro tempo play style, mm-hmm. when I was playing like those traditional priest decks, it was really, really hard for me. But like the having a deck for priest that gives me multiple options in turn one, a really solid turn two body, and just like these great minions that I can use to start establishing presence and great ways to like take control and and establish tempo on the board as I'm going through the mid game, and just like really great ways to kind of like close out and get value. Like, it's a bunch of different types of decks in one, and it plays differently in different matchups, and it's just really, really interesting. But it starts the game on turn one. You may not mulligan into your turn one choices, but you do generally tend to have options and ways to branch the game where you can be making decisions as early as turn one, two, or three as to how that will impact the way the rest of the game is going to go. And that is very close to how that's very close to my heart as to how I like to play the game.
So that's interesting, actually, because when I think dragon deck, I traditionally think very slow. But I guess priest, because they have the whelpling that's a one drop, that they have just more early game options than typical dragon decks?
Yeah,
is that
so
true?
What you got from this is the Twilight Whelp, which is the one drop that gives you zombie chow stats if you're able to satisfy that prerequisite where you're holding a dragon in your hand. And you also get the Wormrest Agent, which is that 2/4 taunt for 2 mana, which again, once you can satisfy that requirement that you're holding a dragon, you have a 2/4 on turn 2. And, you know, when we had Minibot in all over the ladder, that was already like, you know, a top contender for that number 2 spot. And now that like the mini bots and, you know, the 3/2 knife jugglers and stuff like that have kind of been toned down, it's still really a really strong play to get yourself established very early on the board. And it establishes a very healthy creature with very good stats at a very early point on the board on the side of a priest. I get to heal this thing if I don't have anything to follow up with. I get to keep this guy around, and I get to kind of destroy all these little, you know, leopard gnomes.
Yeah, I mean, 3/2s is like the most common stat for,
exactly.
for that sort of price range.
And I could take out one of those and a 2/1, and if depending on how, you know, the rest of my curve works out, I might be drawing cards off of the off of my injured taunt. Or yeah. I might be, you know, I have options. I have things to do, and it's great that, you know, I don't just have to heal my opponent's face on turn two anymore.
Okay, so early on, you're throwing down these minions, mostly trading with them, and then are you still waiting for the big eight drops and stuff to win?
Honestly, I think most of the games, those eight drops are your activators for the other cards. I think Ysera is kind of like the bail me out please kind of card. It's like, hey, listen, this game has been like, if I'm hitting like turn 9, this game has, you know, gone to you know, into double overtime or whatever it is, so I need my big shooter to come down and give me some value and get me back into this in a strong way. And that's why this deck, and especially the list as I've kind of composed it, is more tuned towards being a response to like a highly aggressive meta, where it aims to start early, it aims to outvalue and outpace the decks that want to be more aggressive and kind of just want to burn you out a little bit more quickly, and it forces those decks to slow down and punch through your very efficient taunt minions and deal with your board clearing value and stuff like that while you establish your own kind of control of the game. But if you find yourself against a mid-range deck or a more controlling deck, then you're kind of relying on your Yseras and your Chromaguses or whatever to kind of give you the value that you need to kind of like match them card for card and like go toe-to-toe with them and take the game into the later rounds and still be successful.
Sure, yeah. So one interesting thing that you mentioned to me while we were doing this, because I like playing dragon decks, and I always kind of wondered what the right number of dragons is to have in your deck to make sure that you're getting the procs that you need, right? Because the Wormrest Agent and the Whelpling, you mentioned their stats, and they're awesome, but they rely on having a dragon in your hand. And you found like a rule of thumb, right, for how many dragons you need?
Yes. Far smarter players than I have come up with this general rule of thumb that if you want to be able to activate your cards, Blackwing Technician and stuff like that, that it's a good idea to have about 8 dragons in your deck when you're composing your list. So when you start composing this list, and if you want to like tune it towards to your own thing, I think it's a great idea to not dip below the 8 dragon mark. If you take it to 7, okay, fine. But I mean, even making that adjustment, and I have in my months of playing this deck, I've noticed that the consistency of my win rate dipped ever so slightly because I was just that much more or that much less likely to be able to activate cards that I wanted when I needed them. And I was and it was like that bit less likely for me to have, what I needed in hand at any given point. So, and it's a real big problem for priests because priests have so many good cards and you want all of them in your deck. But unfortunately, if they squeeze out the core of the deck, if they squeeze these dragons out, you're in trouble.
All right. So let's talk about what that core is. So you mentioned the Wormrest Agent, the Twilight Whelp. Those are definitely core, right?
Absolutely.
All right. What else you got?
Well, I don't think you type dragon into your search and start putting cards in your deck unless you want this slightly less buff but costless fire elemental in the Blackwing Corruptor. That guy is just value on values of 4/5 for 5, and with the dragon
5/4 actually.
Sorry, 5/4. My apologies. He's a 5/4/5, and with the dragon activator comes out and does 3 damage. And you can point that 3 damage to face. You can point, but most likely you're going to be pointing that three damage to a minion, so that you can make a favorable trade with whatever minions you have on board, and gaining an advantage in that way. And
or sniping that Ethereal Conjurer that may just drop all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Feels so good.
Nothing's better than that. Like just, here we go. And, Ethereal Conjurer or Jessica Trueheart? Well, sorry, but, goodbye.
Because 6/3, you're like, oh, no. Especially because I'm playing Dragon Warrior a lot.
Okay.
It's like, oh, am I going to have to run my face into that with a weapon? Oh, it's going to hurt. And then, nope. This guy's going to come out, kill it for free, and leave a huge body.
Absolutely. So I think Black and Corruptor is a superstar of any dragon deck. More so than even your 8 or 9 mana dragons. So I'm very, very happy to have him in there. And then, we talk about dragons. Well, dragons came out in Blackrock, but didn't really start taking off until TGT. And one of the big reasons that it started picking up in TGT was because of Twilight Guardian. Now, Twilight Guardian is a 4-mana 2/6, and even at that stat, at that stat line, would be a decent card for a priest to be able to play. But with the dragon activation, you get one extra attack stat, giving you a 3/6 stat line, which is not, which is not just kind of uncommon in the four spot, but really, really influential at that point in the game for having that 6 health. I mean, yeah. If I say I just played a 3/6 and now it's your turn 4, you have to deal with it, I'm taking Fireball off the table, what do you do?
Yeah. Fireball is, well, Fireball and then Shadow Word Pain. So, which you have too, so that's no big deal.
Exactly.
Yeah, those are the only two good answers I've seen to it. Even then, most of the time, I'm happy to take a Fireball on my dragon instead of my face against mages.
Absolutely. And it takes their entire turn to remove the card that you just played, so yeah. You probably have an opportunity to, you know, go into your turn 5 and land whatever you're going to be you know, bring down at that point. So so it's a really, really strong play, and it just gave dragon decks what they needed, a way to kind of like transition into the mid game with a strong, solid card. And and again, you're a priest, so this thing takes some aggro, you're going to be able to bring it back, and you're going to be able to keep it alive and in the game. So that is one of the stronger cards that makes this possible as an archetype. Yeah. And then, I also talked about how pretty much Ysera is essential to this deck as a kind of like a last-ditch effort. I tend to drop Ysera very, very carefully, right? Like, it's not just, oh, hey, I have 9 mana, you know, Ysera's on the board. It's more like, how much removal have I seen here? How much, you know, where are we at in the game? When Ysera comes down, the game should be over in a couple of turns. Usually, Ysera getting dealt with is, hint, it is kind of like the death knell on my, on my whole strategy. So holding it, you know, using it to activate other cards or whatever, and then just kind of like, if I'm being ground out of resources and things are kind of swinging against my, against me, then I can put Sarah on the board. Boom! I get options. You know, I get, I'm getting dream cards, and you know, hopefully I'm getting like 2 or 3 of them, and I'm able to kind of like turn the tides and kind of like, you know, switch the tempo of the game back into my favor.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super annoying. Between that and Entomb against this Dreadsteed deck. Are you running Entomb?
Yes.
I bet
yes.
You are.
I'm running a copy of Entomb here. And I like this card. I'm missing my Light Bomb. But Entomb is particularly valuable. And I found like there's a lot of these decks on ladder that have these like significant drops, and not just, you know, C'thun anymore, but like, you know, N'Zoth, and you know, these like big influential single cards that you know, so Entomb really just kind of came in and positioned Priest to be able to deal with this kind of like old gods thematic meta. And, you know, it's not everything that you run into on the ladder, so I try not to run two of. As a matter of fact, I'm very, very cautious about the cards that cost above, 5 mana and above, and being too generous with that, with you know, that area of the deck, because, hey, if the game started at 4 mana, this deck would be amazing. But unfortunately, it starts off at 1 mana, and you don't always have that many options when things tick off. So, so you want to position yourself where you can make use of the resources that you have to start off the game, and you have these few influential cards that can be key to helping you stay in control of the game or take over and lead you to victory. And Entomb is really good for that, because you could take your opponent's late game and use it against them.
Yeah. It's a huge swing play. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm hoping you don't draw it in these 3 games, is what I'm saying. all right, so we're going to jump into our best of 3 series. As a reminder, I'm going to be playing the Chris's Warlock Dreadsteed deck from Yeah, introduced in March 2016. I get confused because there's so many Warlock decks recently. It is the Warlock Dreadsteed deck. You can go back to episode 68 if you want to see more about it. How are you feeling about your chances before we go into this, Craig?
You know what? I've gone over his list and done a little bit of my homework, and I'm feeling pretty good about this.
Okay. All right.
I think
feeling confident. I like that. But you're still going to get crushed.
I think I'm going to be crushing Chris's hopes and dreams of getting his deck into the pantheon of decks there.
Wow. So take that, Chris.
Hey. Sorry, buddy.
Chris, I'm going to try my best, buddy. I did a lot of practice with this deck, so I'm hoping I can do you proud. So we're going to go do it right now. I'm going to live stream it, so you'll be able to watch it on GameDiplomat.com. As always, if you go there, you'll be able to see the series. Are you going to live stream your side of it, Craig? You don't have to, but if you want to, you can.
I don't mind doing that if there's a way to set that up.
All right, we'll see how long it's going to take.
Okay.
Because I don't want you stalling and trying to get out of our duel. I know your tactics.
Not a chance.
All right, so we will be right back after this. All right, and we are back after a very short and painful two games, only two, didn't even go full three. Craig, let me congratulate you on what I think may be the biggest win ever on Happy Hearthstone between two decks. That was not even close.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, unfortunately.
Thank you for trying for half a second to pretend at least.
Listen, I think that you know, I think that you piloted your deck as proficiently as you could, but you were merely outmatched by the flexibility of the Dragon Priest deck.
It certainly felt like it. I was saying on my stream, every single turn I was playing my mindset when I looked at the board and looked at my hand and looked at your board, I was always just like, okay, what can I do to not lose the game this turn? Because that's what I had to do. Because you had lethal on the board like every single turn after turn four. It was brutal. You kept the board filled. You kept healing up. You traded really well. And I just felt like I didn't have answers. The one time I was getting optimistic, you stole my buffed Nerubian egg and then punched my own guy with it and stole my 4-4. What a jerk priest thing to do.
Yes, that's a terrible thing to do as a priest. But it's particularly why Shadow Madness is in the deck.
Yeah, I mean, I did not expect Shadow Madness, because I always enjoy Shadow Madness. It's fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it in too many decks. I mean, is it for cases like that, essentially?
Yeah, it's okay, so what you don't see in this list, and what you're not even seeing on the options for the list, is a Cabal Shadow Priest. And, you know, Priest makes a habit of using the strength of your opponent against them, kind of like mm-hmm. a Tai Jitsu type of deck, usually. So the Shadow Madness I like as an alternative to just having, like, you know, several Holy Novas and stuff like that, as a way of kind of like, okay, it's a kind of a removal, but leveraged properly, you're removing something and kind of putting yourself at an advantage. So that's kind of what it's there for.
Yeah, because I mean, especially now you mentioned Nazoth as kind of a thing that's happening in the meta. There's a lot of good Death Rattle cards being played out there, and a lot of them are less than three attack that you can steal.
Yeah, absolutely. So being able to take something, swing it around, send it into their side, and get benefit from it on your side, very good.
Yeah. So one thing I noticed, and I'm curious if we just didn't play long enough games to even see it. I didn't see any new cards in your deck. Are you running new cards in there, and you didn't even have to even bother playing them because you were beating me so bad?
you know, sometimes I'm running new cards, and sometimes I'm not. Actually, no, none of the cards that are in this current list are from the Old Gods expansion. I don't think the Old Gods did nod in the direction of dragons in a little bit, but based on the cards that I tried, Scaled Nightmare, the 2/6 that doubles its attack every turn, there's the... Okay, it's a Twilight something where the attack is equal to the number of cards in your hand as opposed to the health being being, you know, buffed up. And, you know, you're not even seeing, like, Twilight Drake in this deck. Okay, I'm probably saying that wrong. Is Twilight Drake the one that where the health is... boosted by the number of cards you're holding?
I can't remember, dude.
Okay.
All the cards in the new set are so confusing because it's like 10 different names for cultist all thrown in there, and you're just supposed to like know, oh, the disciple's the one that gives it every turn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a you know, mind bender trying to keep up with all the new influx of cards, and the fact that I haven't even been in Wild just because I'm still trying to understand Standard and, you know, get my mind wrapped around all the stuff that's happening there. So yeah. I can't imagine all the combinations when you take these cards and you throw in the, you know, the GVG cards and all the NAC cards into the whole mix or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah, Wild is pretty crazy. Yeah, so one variant I've actually seen get pretty popular, and it's one my brother is playing a lot, actually, is the N'Zoth Dragon Priest, where you throw Deathwing at the top, you throw N'Zoth at the top, both 10 drops, and then usually you throw in Chilmaw in there, too. Is that just... It sounds like, based on what you said earlier, that's just too slow of a deck for what you're looking for.
I feel like having... Like this deck has one 9-drop. And again, like, I'm very, very careful about what I put in the later slots because mm-hmm. I want to make sure that my deck is still competitive against things that are going to try and, you know, push to end the game earlier. Your brother's deck sounds like an excellent deck against a control meta. And if you're not hitting, I would say, rank 15, 10, that area, whatever, then there's a good chance that you're going to be running into like a mix of decks across the spectrum. And so having something that leans towards heavier control that has these big bombs that can kind of come in and end the game and, you know, gets all that value out of it, I think it is actually, you know, very, very strong. But as you start getting into those upper echelons where you're running into a lot more tempo, a lot more aggro, and, you know, a lot more, you know, decks playing, you know, a lot more consistency, I think you're gonna find those 10 mana cards sitting in your hand while you're dying on turn 7 a lot more often, and that's what I personally found. So that's why I tend to trend away from those from those decks, unless of course I'm running like a lot of healing and a lot of removal and things to kind of get me to that later point in the game. So
yeah, it's interesting. I'm actually really excited that you brought this deck on without any new cards, because one of the things we all saw with the meta was a lot of times we just want to play new cards, right? Because when C'Thun came out, literally everybody was playing a C'Thun deck.
Yeah,
like that's all there was. And then over time we realized, hey, it's not actually good to play all C'Thun, right? You can maybe dabble in C'Thun in another deck, like that in the rogue deck, for example.
Exactly.
And so it's interesting to see an archetype like this that is kind of a more anti-aggro dragon priest deck look at all the new cards and be like, you know what, I've tried them, I actually don't need them. And so it's good because it forces us to kind of keep what is the right word? To like judge the new cards fairly, to yes. not just be excited and throw them in. But it's also good for people that maybe can't afford right now to buy a bunch of new packs and buy all the new cards. This is another good deck that they don't have to go out and buy new cards for.
Yeah, I think this is a really, I think this list is pretty strong. And yeah, it's everything If you have up to League of Explorers and you haven't really filled out your new collection of Wizards of the Old Gods just yet, then this is pretty viable, because the Midnight Drake, which is the one that gains attack based on each card in your hand, just didn't really perform for me at all. None of the new dragons. I didn't get a chance to play with Deathwind Dragonlord, and if I had packed it, I would have played it. But since I didn't pack it, I am reluctant to craft it, because I feel like I might craft it and then it might not stay in my deck. Yeah. And actually, one of the big reasons why the Deathwings is not here, Deathrattle, take all the cards from your hand and put them in the field, right? Perfect, wonderful. Except that some of my dragons have battle cries.
Yeah.
Azure Drake, and the
Twilight Guardian.
Twilight Guardian. Yeah. So, and Twilight Whelp even. So yeah. What happens when they get pulled out? Well, okay, fine, I have a 2/1, 2/6, whatever. Like they've declined in stats, and yeah. I've kind of extended myself into a board clear. So yeah. So while it's, and with Nazoth, yeah, you can recover from that, because you can recover from, by playing Nazoth and then, getting your Deathwing back. But just Deathwing, I think, is going a little riskier with it.
Yeah, because actually I think the real benefit of that Death Rattle effect is it's just a flag that says Nazoth brings me back.
Yeah.
Because how often are you dropping a 10-drop with all these other cheap things still in your hand? Like, yeah. You don't have that many cards by the time you get to turn 10.
Exactly. Unless you've gotten really, really lucky with your
yeah.
drawing.
I mean, Scott brings this up in our reviews a lot. It feels like a little win more. If you're on turn 10 dropping Deathwing with 5 dragons in your hand, you're probably going to win the game anyways.
You know what? I will say this, though. You drop Deathwing, those cards are in your hand. If you've got to spend a lot of mana to get those cards from your hand to the board, or you could just rely on the Deathwing Deathrattle to get them out for you, that is an advantage. And thankfully it's only susceptible to about two combos that are active in the meta. One, Brawl, and two, do that one, like, set everything to one health, Equality, and Power.
Oh, and Lord Fedric or something. I don't know. Edric. Well, Lord Edric?
Well, I was thinking more about the Pyromancer Equality combo that will clear gotcha. Everything off of whatever. But it's with Light Bomb gone and, with a couple of these other, classes kind of taking prominence, getting your board cleared with a bunch of healthy minions out there is not quite as common anymore. And overextending is not quite as punishable. As much punishable anymore, and you can kind of see those things coming based on the type of decks that you're playing against. So, yeah. I'm not saying that Deathwing is a bad card. I'm not saying Deathwing is a good card. I wish I had an opportunity to play with it, and I think that that your brother's Nazoth dragon deck will run into consistency issues. As it gets further up the ladder and it starts getting into a little bit more of that tempo, whatever. But hey, listen. I believe that the deck you play on the ladder is the one that you have the most fun with. Yeah. So if that's working right now, then that's what you should stick with.
All right, so let's talk about your deck more, though, because clearly it wrecked my face, so it's doing good. Go ahead.
One of the nice things about this deck, and one of the things I think I mentioned earlier, is that it's able to kind of play in different styles from the same list. So against you, knowing that your deck was a slower, more control style deck that would probably take away the late game if I let it get too far, I decided, I'm going to play aggro. I'm going to go after your face. I'm going to limit my trade interactions on the board, and I'm going to focus on making you catch up and kind of putting you on that back foot and making you feel that pressure and that tension so that, I'm able to close out the game as soon as possible. Because what I don't want to have happen is, Hellfire, Demon Wrath, and all these other board clears that you have to empty my hand and leave you with so much of a value advantage that that you wind up taking control of the board and then taking the game from me.
Yeah, I mean, those were the few turns where I felt like I really was getting back into it. Like when I had a Hellfire combo and I could trade a few bodies to make sure a bunch of stuff dropped, that's when I felt like I could finally breathe a sigh of relief. But every time I did that, you'd just dump like four more dudes on the board.
Yeah, trying to keep a healthy balance between the number of cards I had in my hand and the number of cards I had on the board was really important. And, you know, being able to cycle with my I don't know why I'm forgetting the name of this card. I want to call it the Light Warden for some reason. But anyway, being able to use my clerics, my Northshire clerics, to cycle Powered Shield, Azure Drake, and like keeping a healthy cycle in my hand and managing the resources that I'm committing to the board versus what I was holding in my hand was very, very key for that game. It's a key strategy for aggro decks in general, by the way. And this is one of the things that I kind of see, like when I have certain opponents, I like to say this, I'm favored in the mirror when it comes to a lot of these aggressive decks. I keep track of my stats or whatever, and I generally tend to find that when I'm up against, when I'm doing that face hunter versus face hunter, or that face shaman versus face shaman, or generally I tend to come out on top over the course of the season. And I think it's because I believe there is strategy involved in every matchup, no matter how easy it's supposed to be from any particular side. And and there's a lot of resource conservation that you have to do, even when your intent is to play aggressively, because you're trying to end the game quickly, but you're also trying not to be out of the game by falling victim to what control decks like to do, which is deplete you of your resources.
Yeah. So how do you do that in this deck, and how do you know when to go aggressive and when not to, I guess? Because this deck can play fairly control-y too, right?
Yes, absolutely. You can, if you are up against a strong start from your opponent and you can see like, okay, well, they're coming through with a lot of aggressive minions and stuff like that, you don't have as much of an imperative to hold cards as you have an imperative to kind of like be a physical presence on the board. So, if you're maybe sometimes you're struggling to get to that, how can I circle turn? Maybe sometimes you're like, okay, if I could just get to this Holy Nova, okay, so I want to just kind of play strategically to kind of keep myself alive and get to that point, and then I can start playing out my minions and taking over. So you're playing like clerics and letting them point lightning bolts and stuff like that at those, and selectively, shadow and painting and stuff like that, and not really committing yourself to it until you get to a point where, okay, this is my clear turn, and then this is where I can start taking control of the game. And so you can play it a little bit more of that control style, or basically whatever your opponent is doing, you can try to mold your deck and from the mulligan stage to do the opposite.
Okay, interesting. So you see what they want to do and then just do whatever you can to thwart their plans.
Absolutely. And this is one of those decks that is really, really strong at doing that, I believe, and in my experience, because it has such a broad toolkit to be able to help you with, okay, well, here's how you can get value and here's how you can just stomp face and it's all together under the same roof.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt like I even had a chance to win those games. It's pretty brutal. Do you normally win that strong when you win?
Well, I was fortunate in those games to have something to do consistently in the early turns versus, and to have removal for some of your for some of the things that you dropped, like Deathlord. I believe it took me two turns to get through your second Death Lord, but it only took me a Shadow Word Pain to get through your first.
Yeah. And I was sitting there on the stream talking about it forever, like, oh no, is he going to have it? I played it anyways. And then you didn't do it right away. So I was like, oh, he doesn't have it. Because you're checking out your hand, you played another card, you healed something, and then you Shadow Word Pained it. Oh, it was so painful. I thought I was in the clear.
Yeah, it's not just like sometimes I'm kind of budgeting the mana, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't just two mana that. Well, yeah, I mean it's a Deathlord, so I had a little bit more than two mana. So I was like, okay, what else can I do this turn? aside from the obvious Shadow Word pain that I'm about to play.
And my hope rise a little bit and then crush.
It wasn't BM. It was just strategy. I promise.
It's a war tactic. You're just making sure you're demoralizing the enemy. It's good. All right. So
one thing I picked up on was, I think in the first game, you siphon sold my Alkanai Soul Priest. And once I saw that, I was like, I don't think you have any way of dealing with Ysera after this. So that's why I was kind of like, okay, Ysera, you're on the board. You're in the game. Let's go. And it was just like, oh, well, now you're quiet.
Yeah, I copied it, and then, or I faceless manipulated it, and then silenced it. Yeah. Man, I really didn't want to use Siphon Soul there, but that was just one of those things. You had like 15 damage on the board. So it's just like every single turn is just like, what can I do to stay alive? What can I do?
Yeah. And Alkanai, like, you have that old spell that turns your hero power into damage. But Alkanai being a physical presence on the board. And I should actually mention, Alkanai in Circle is an introduction to the deck that was made for the transition into Standard because you lost Light Bomb, and because you lost some of these other tools to kind of help you, stay balanced in the game. Being able to Alkanai and like play two circles in one turn as kind of like a tremendous board clear that kind of takes out a lot of the different scenarios that you'd be up against has been it's kind of like my answer to you as a priest not really being able to flatten the playing field and take over. So that's part of the adjustment. And it's kind of like, there are these cards that were dying to get, brought back into the forefront. And with the transition into Standard and certain cards going away, getting those slots and getting that opportunity to bring some of those cards back.
Yeah, it's exciting to see kind of they're old cards, but they're new again, essentially. It's fun to see them get another chance.
Absolutely.
All right, so any other thoughts on your deck? Any other advice you want to share before we move on to the community section?
It's a fun deck for me. I've taken it to some local tournaments and done pretty well with it. Like I said, I like to lean it towards aggro. I don't feel like it does a very good job of being consistent against control. So if you find yourself going up against slower metas, there may be some tweaks you can do to it, but it just might not be the right choice. But if you find yourself, constantly getting slammed by shamans and stuff like that, then a couple tweaks and I think this is your deck, this is your guy, and you're good to go.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because I don't know how much this plays a part into it, probably more at my level than yours. As soon as I see dragon, I just immediately think, oh, it's a slow deck. And then I play as if I'm playing against a control deck, but it's misleading against your deck because your deck is going aggro.
Yeah, the curve starts off really high in the earlier in the lower mana points for this particular deck, and it's not very characteristic of priest, which I think is something that kind of gives you an advantage, because also when you're on the ladder, right, you're expecting, oh well, this is a priest, what is he's gonna drop his cleric on turn one, he doesn't have any options, and then so they're gonna mulligan expecting a longer game, and they're gonna be surprised if you mulligan into your early game.
Oh, yeah. That's very true. Well, Craig, congratulations on beating the Happy Hearthstone defending deck champion. You are now, or your deck is now the reigning deck.
Well, I hope you take to it as much as I did and garner success. And I hope we see this going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to play it. I think this will be a really fun deck. I'm going to build it right after this show, start practicing. Now that we're battle.net friends, you can watch me and chastise me if I make poor plays with your deck.
Never, but I'll offer advice.
All right, deal. And then, I don't know what we're going up against next. I can't remember. Maybe it was a hunter deck, but we've got one lined up. And then if you want to be the next person to take on this, send me an email, ajosh@outlook.com. I'm always looking for new deck battle hosts. But so it's one battle, this deck now just has to win two more times to get in the Hall of Fame. It's harder than it sounds because only two decks have ever done it in the history of the show. but I'm hopeful this one.
And, you know, some advice to potential challengers. I find that, you know, keeping a nice soft cloth nearby to wipe the tears from your inevitable defeats is just really, really good.
Wow. So you should have given me this advice before the show. My cheeks wouldn't be so wet right now.
Well, it would have sounded a little too much like bragging then.
That's true. But now I know the truth. It's just saying the truth. All right. So let's jump into the questions, because actually you brought questions this time, right?
Yes. So in addition to being your guest today, I'm also the moderator of the Google Plus community for the Happy Hearthstone. And well, one of the team of moderators. I can't take exclusive credit. And
you can. They're not here. They'll never know.
It's all me. It's all. So basically, a couple of us kind of got together at the beginning of the year and started doing a daily question. And keeping up with publishing a question every single day, even with as a team effort, was kind of stressful. So we've transitioned it now into a segment that we call Ask the Happy Hearthstone. And my hope is that we can capture questions asked of the community and kind of and that this can be a resource for the show that you can use going forward. And so a way to kind of communicate with the show and with the group there. So we have a couple of questions that were pulled from posts made into the community to bring here.
Very cool. And yeah, and actually you brought quite a few, so I actually saved some for future episodes. So we'll be pulling from this list in the future as well to help field this. So we don't get many questions sent in directly like via email. So I'm really excited to have this. Thank you for doing this.
Not a problem at all. Happy to do it.
All right. What's our first question?
Okay, so we've got a question from Charles, and he asks, with the launch of Standard Mode, do you think that increase the relative value of basic set legendaries? Since they're going to always be available going in Standard, should I make it a priority to craft those before Old God legendaries?
So I think absolutely. I think it's almost a no-brainer to craft stuff. Like if you're missing like Sylvanas, even Ragnaros, sort of like any of those kind of just really good value legendaries that are generic enough to fit in a lot of decks, I think that's the number one thing to craft.
Absolutely, and I completely agree with that. As a matter of fact, I would even say that some of those borderline, not quite there legendaries might even still be a good idea. There may come a meta where the spell proliferation is low enough that having a 2-mana 4/4 is actually good. And it may come and it may go and it may come again. But, the Old Gods are only going to be around for 2 years, right? So, yeah. And Milhouse is going to have his time.
I don't know. Milhouse Mana Store might be going a little far for me, but I will say he can be quite fun in many tavern brawls.
Absolutely.
There's value there. But yeah, I think it's definitely true. Especially with the Old God cards. We kind of mentioned this earlier. We're getting to a better place of understanding the value of them, the real value of them, which just takes time and practice as the meta shifts to understand.
Absolutely.
There's still some legendaries I'm just nervous about crafting in Old Gods, because the meta may shift in such a way that just you can't play it. And if you can't play it like right now, maybe you can't play it for a year and you only get a couple months out of it before it goes into wild. But classic ones they're with you forever.
Exactly.
All right. What's the next question?
No matter how many times you try to dust them.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one is from Sharon. And she asks, have you ventured into wild? How has it been for you, and what have you encountered? And this one I'm actually going to pose to you, Josh, because I have not ventured into wild.
Yeah, so it actually surprised me, right? So I did not. So full disclosure, I had no real intention of playing wild. I didn't really find it interesting. I figured it's just going to be really cheesy, overpowered decks that aren't very fun to play against, unless you also have a super cheesy, overpowered deck. But I had to play Wild a lot to practice for this Dreadsteed deck. Mm-hmm. And the opponents really weren't that bad. Or the decks really weren't that cheesy. They felt like, oh, I'm just kind of playing 6 months in the past, sort of.
Okay.
Like, you just see a ton of Dr. Booms, right? But at this point, we figured out the answers to Dr. Boom. So, I mean, I'm running my brain. I blame the cold. The dude that snipes the 7 attack or more.
Oh, Big Game Hunter.
Big Game Hunter, thank you. So, like, I'm running that in the deck and all that sort of stuff. So, you just see that. So, every now and then you get, like, PTSD flashbacks to, like, oh, God, it's Dr. Boom again. But the decks are kind of fun. I mean, a lot of them are kind of variants of decks that you're seeing in Standard with just kind of more cards thrown in there. But I had a really good time playing. I didn't really notice a very big difference. I still didn't... Excuse me. I didn't play ranked because it's hard enough for me to climb the rank ladder. I need to focus my attention on one. So I don't think I would ever play Wild ranked. But Wild Standard was a lot of fun.
Hmm. I think I'm at a point where I'm just like, if I play, it's ranked or I'm just being a wuss. So and that's a personal statement. That's not a thing against anybody. I have a collection that's near complete. I have so many classes, so much experience with so many classes. I can build any like meta appropriate deck that I'd want to try. So kind of like taking the licks in ranked for me is kind of like basically like,
it's the only way you get to feel anything anymore, Craig.
There you go.
All right, that's good. You got like a... This is a child-friendly show. Yeah. All right. I was going to make an off-color joke.
Okay.
But I won't. I understand. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, maybe Wild's the new thing. Maybe that can be the new thing that makes you feel again, Craig. You go in there because you'll face all these new cards and not have to... And don't do rank, just do standard and be like, oh man, these cards, I forgot about them.
Hey, I actually am looking forward to the season where I can match my ranking in both sides. Hopefully in Legend, but you know, at least rank five or something like that. Something significant in both ladders.
Yeah, I think for listeners, if you're not really interested in Wild, don't force it. Because what I think will be really fun, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, that's when going to Wild is going to be like a totally different experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's when you're going to have a huge card pool that is only touchable there. Because right now it's like most of the cards you're playing anyways are standard. But like 3, 4, 5 years down the road, Wild is going to be just a crazy nostalgic field trip. Like if nothing else, I'm going to go there every few months and just be like, oh, I remember all these cards. Oh, I remember when old gods were dominating everything. How crazy to see C'Thun again, right? You wouldn't have seen C'Thun for years at that point.
Yeah.
If you hadn't been playing.
And so, honestly, I think we're also going to be seeing some emergence of like things that just were not possible at any point ever in Standard, but because of the intersection of cards that are going to be available to you, you're going to be seeing some insane new combinations in Wild that will only exist there. Well, there and every once in a while you'll draft the right deck in Arena and you might have it.
Yeah, it's true, actually. I didn't think about that because all the cards that are in Wild now, all the cards they're paired with, they've always been paired with. So they're kind of balanced to be paired with those cards.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So the cards that are out now, when they get combined with, you know, old gods or whatever comes after old gods in the future, there could be some super crazy combination.
Hey, we're just getting started in the year of the squid or whatever it is.
The year of the squid. The most most serious of years. All right, so iTunes reviews. We didn't have any again. This is like 3 episodes in a row, I think. So if you like the show, if you haven't rated us on iTunes, that's how new people find the show. iTunes ranks the podcast when people search for Hearthstone based on the reviews. So if you go on there, give a 5-star review, leave a message. We'll read it on the show next time. No donations as well. But we do have a card of the week, Craig, and that comes with a song.
Oh, yes. I'll tell you this much. I finalized my song before I finalized my deck, so I'm ready to go.
Wow, okay, all right. This is what you were actually preparing for.
Absolutely, yeah. I actually have like three different options here for songs to pick.
What? You haven't even chosen one?
No, I have one that's kind of standing out, but I did make sure like I prepped a couple of different options and kind of listened to myself for them. I was like, you know, this is the one I think I'm a little bit more happy with. And then, you know, basically the card of the week, I think it's appropriate. So this
yeah, that's true actually, and it's appropriate that you had three options for this card.
Exactly. So so this is my wrap for card of the week. Okay. You can't control my icky minions, they set the pace. Pull out the glaivezooka, hitting straight to the face. First oink is a pig running straight at your dome. Second oink coming in because he's never alone. On a wolf come to battle, aim straight into the head with a shot. You fear the skill I command, so a taunt you drop. When you hear the bird chirp, you can hardly speak. Make a slot in your deck, it's the card of the week.
Dude, that was amazing. Oh man, most people like sing along to like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star tune or something. You like made a full thing.
Yeah, I had to. I had that just kind of rattling around in my head because like I wanted to do something where that kind of like represented like the way I play the game. So yeah. This is like turn by turn me killing you as a face hunter.
Oh, I felt it. I felt your priest dragons coming right in my face the whole time, too. And I try not to laugh or anything during the song, but I lost it when you came in with oink and the pig. That was so good.
Yeah, and it's always tougher because you showed up twice, right?
Yeah, of course. All right, so what is the card? I mean, if people can't guess by now, shame on them, but go ahead and introduce it.
All right, so the card of the week is Call of the Wild, and this is the 8-mana hunter spell, summon all three animal companions, and this is awesomeness on top of awesomeness. I wish it cost less so I could run more copies of it and have it show and have it be played in more games, but every time this shows up, every time I'm able to play this on 8-mana, I'm totally happy.
Yeah, man, so this is the one card I also want to bring up because it's the one card I feel bad that we did not mention in the review. Because I think we're normally on top of the ball. So I'm going to pass the buck here a little bit. you can shame me if you think this is over the line. When I searched on Hearthhead, which is the site we used, it didn't show epic cards. So I filtered by expansion in class, and I didn't realize till I was halfway through that it wasn't showing epic cards. And I thought I went back. I just don't think I saw this card when I was doing the review, because I just totally missed it. Because it's such a good card. Like, all right, look at this. Total stats, right? You're casting at 8 mana, but you're getting 10-10 stats across 3 bodies. Guaranteed 5 damage charge, a big taunt body, and a global buff that is sort of a cheap charge, right? If you have any other minions on the board.
Yeah.
I mean, look at let's take the charge body, right? So you get Huffer on the board. He's a 5-2 charge because he's buffed from the other dude. By comparison, Reckless Rocketeer, right? 5-2 charge. You pay 6 mana just for that body. And then Corcron Elite, 4 mana, so half it, and you just get a 4-3 charge, and that's it.
Yeah.
Leroy, 5 mana, you get a 6-2 charge, right? But it has some downside.
Yeah, you're giving your opponent two minions to kill off your Leroy.
Like, just looking at that alone, looking at Hogger, then looking... Huffer, not Hogger.
Right.
And the things that come with him, this card is just off the charts on value, right?
Absolutely. It is... like, the cards individually, I think, are already well costed at 3.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about it, okay, so you have a 4-4 with taunt, okay, on 3 mana. Or you have a 4-2 with charge, which you no longer have another one of. This is the only 4-2 with charge in the game that you can get in the 3-mana slot. You know, and that two health versus one health is a big, big difference.
Yeah, saves it from half the hero powers in the game.
Exactly. And then you have a 2-4 that has a global buff, as opposed to the other 2-2 that has a global buff in the neutral slot, or a 2-3 that has a buff for a very specific type of card that can come behind it. So even Leok in the 3-mana slot is a decent card that would probably see play independently. You drop the random element of Animal Companion, you get all three, and you get a discount of 1 mana off of
the because that's the thing, right? Because Animal Companion, all those cards are so good because of the RNG.
Right.
Because you don't know which one you're going to get, they give you better ones than you should get for 3 mana.
Exactly.
And this is a cheaper combination of all that? Like, what? And RNG is totally gone. You know exactly what you're going to get every time, which is really reassuring, because there's a lot of times when I have Animal Companion in like a removal spell in my hand, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, should I play Animal Companion or should I just remove them, right? Just to make sure it happens. That never happens with Call of the Wild. You know exactly what you're getting.
Always Huffer.
Always Huffer.
And not just because it's a Rainad stream.
Yeah, so the most interesting thing about this card to me, too, is there are only two cards in the game that I know of, and correct me if you can think of any other, Craig, that can actually trade one for one with it, which is the best you can hope for against this card, by the way.
Okay.
Flame Strike is really the best counter, and then Twisting Nether, which never gets played except for against you in that last deck battle, which it didn't save me anyways. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Deathwing can come in, right? Because it clears the board.
Right, but yeah, you can push off the three minions and whatever. And I think, honestly, if you... I guess, well, Brawl doesn't completely do the job.
Yeah, you can get lucky with Brawl if you add something on your side, I guess.
Yeah, and that's... And, like, if we're talking two-card combos, then the Equality Pyromancer. But, you know, yeah. If I'm taking a full board flip for my 8 mana, I'm happy about that.
Yeah. And it's guaranteed to do 5 damage somewhere immediately before they can even respond. So even if they trade with it, that's fine. You got to deal your 5 damage.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's a really, really strong value card. So many different, you know, useful components split across the different bodies as opposed to unified in one, like kind of behemoth or whatever. I think this is a great kind of incentive to hunters to make it to this stage of the game. And, you know, they made a good 8-mana card and gave it to hunters. So, you know, maybe this is kind of them, you know, a wink and a nod in the direction of, hey, maybe not face all the time.
Kind of thing. Although I will say, I think this card is really good because it's basically good in any hunter deck. Because I've seen face hunters finish off with this. Because usually that's like right when face hunters are running out of steam, and all of a sudden, boom, nope, they're back in business.
Yeah, I'd hate to be holding this as a face hunter from like turn 6 to turn 8 to be able to play it. Just because you do tend to, like, you know, when most of your cards cost less than, you know, 3 mana or less, you do tend to be out of cards in your hand by a certain point. So I am a little hesitant about putting it in what I would consider a true face deck, but I do believe that there is call for like an aggressive list that might aim to finish off with this, but like tapers into tapers from like an aggressive opening into so stuff like a the 6-mana the lion that death rattles into
Savannah Highmane.
Savannah Highmane, right? Yes, you know, I think any deck that has Savannah Highmane, at least even as a one-off, should have Call of the Wild, and you know, because you have that kind of like a mana bridge into it.
Yeah, totally. And hey, I've definitely been loving it in my Yogg-Saron Mindless Hunter deck. It's been fun.
You know, I've seen that list, and I haven't played it myself, but it's one of those lists that I'm definitely interested in trying out, because it looks really, really cool. And hunters have a really good set of efficient spells at their disposal,
And I don't think you even need that many spells cast before Yogg-Saron. As a matter of fact, I think there's a certain amount of diminishing returns, like, you know, how many spells have you cast before Yogg-Saron was most likely to kill himself kind of a scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. He has killed himself probably half the times I've played him. Yeah, it's funny. The deck is a guilty pleasure for sure, because mm-hmm. I don't have the full deck list either, so it's not perfect. But I've been having fun with it. But every now and then, I run into like a mage that just basically calls my bluff. Because most of the hunter spells, at least the ones I'm running, like maybe like a third of them are targeted minion removal. So they just won't play minions.
Oh.
They'll just attack my face with spells and ping me. And like all I'm left to do is like I can throw a couple spells at their face, but just hero power every single turn. And then eventually they're like, well, it's turn 10. I'm going to drop my legendaries, make a bunch of fireballs, and now you're dead. Every now and then it just felt helpless because you're like, oh no, there's nothing I could do. Pass. And every time you pass, I die a little inside.
Yeah. And also from losing health, right?
Yeah, that too. I die a little spiritually, emotionally, and in game. All right. So any other thoughts on this card before we close out?
No, it's a tremendous value card, and I recommend it be in any hunter deck worth playing.
All right, there you go. So if you want to check out Craig's awesome Dragon Priest deck, you can find that in the show notes on gamediplomat.com. We'll have links to all the cards and the full deck list, and also a separate article, which will be linked in the show notes, where Craig goes through card by card, explains why it's in the deck, how to play it, and how to win with the deck, which I'm super excited about. I'll definitely be reading all of that since I'll be playing that deck in the next Dex battle.
Absolutely.
And we'll also have videos of our live streams there. So, Craig, you were able to record your side, I think, right?
Yes.
Sweet. So we're going to have both sides up there, which that's always way more fun to me. Just being able to see both sides and see, oh, what if they had made this choice instead, when you can see what cards everyone has. It's really interesting. So gamediplomat.com. As always, we'd love to know what you thought of the show and what you'd like to see added in future episodes. You can find us on Google+, where Craig single-handedly is adminning and distributing justice. And
it's all me. Forget about Franklin. Forget about Kenneth. Forget about everyone else.
Those are all just your pseudonyms, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So search Google+ for Happy Hearthstone. You'll find it. Find a huge group of people talking about Hearthstone all day, every day, with sweet pictures and posts and questions. Post questions there if you want us to answer it on the show.
Yep. Absolutely.
You can contact me directly on Twitter. I'm at jaugustine, or email me ajosh@outlook.com. Or hey, maybe just leave a comment on the blog, which I love because nobody ever does.
Aww.
GameDiplomat.com. Sad days. And if you enjoyed the show, you could please consider supporting us. You can find more info at GameDiplomat.com/donate. Craig, where can people find you if they want to talk to you or hear about things you're up to?
Well, when I'm not thinking about Hearthstone, I'm thinking about health and personal fitness. And I write a blog called Fat Guy Fitness, but fat is spelled in the kind of 80s cool way, where it's P-H-A-T, right? So it's fatguyfitness.blogspot.com. And it's just a personal blog of my efforts. And basically, it's fitness advice from somebody who needs it, not somebody who, you know, has already is already in perfect shape. I think there's something to be learned from someone who's actually, you know, depends on the advice, rather than, you know, some Adonis telling you, hey, put that down, you don't need it. You know, it's like, hey, yeah, I emotionally need it, but here's why I shouldn't.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate that, because sometimes, man, every time I try and start like a new exercise regime, it's intimidating, right? Because it's like, change your entire life and be the perfect person. I'm just not ready for that. I need baby steps.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, the thing that you need to change isn't the thing that they want to talk to you about. So, you know, it's good to have a venue where you can kind of like get the flavor of here's what this guy's experience is. And I try to get really, really personal and, you know, dig really, really deep as far as like the stories that I share. And, you know, so it's not just like, hey, this is my advice. Like, no, here's my path. Here's my story. This might work for you. This might not. But, you know, everyone's going to take something from it. And, you know, I hope people enjoy it. So, hey, it's the fact.
And I'm already seeing a Christmas video with Richard Simmons on here. So I'm already sold on this blog.
Yeah, I think I just kind of, some of the later entries, I, you know, was really looking for content. But, hey, listen, Richard Simmons, you know, spent many, many years getting a lot of people fit in it with his own personal brand of fitness. And I totally agree with having a message that's very unique, but promoting something that's very positive.
Yeah. And is this numbering right? Do you have almost 300 posts on here?
Because
the latest one is 288, and it looks like they're all numbered going backwards. Maybe even more. Yeah, there's some that are like 0.5, 0.6.
I don't know. I just I get into a zone. I put them up, and I rarely scroll back. So I'd be surprised if it's actually 200, but there's certainly a good catalog of them up there.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Craig. It was really fun having you here.
Hey, it was a pleasure being here. I've been meaning to do this since the first deck battle, and I finally
are you satisfied? Did you come on the show and you crushed as hard as you hoped?
You know what? Hopefully, I will make a triumphant return to the show, bringing another deck on, and I'll be crushing the hopes of a more established archetype than early game, kind of mid game, kind of late gamey Reno, and also there's Dreadsteeds type of deck, whatever. But I'll give the standard rotation a chance to come through, and we'll see here.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, we'll have to have you on the show again. It was really fun.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I'll try to do your deck proud in the next couple deck battles. Get it in the Hall of Fame, hopefully.
Hey, looking forward to that too.
Yeah. All right, so thank you, Craig, and thanks again to everyone listening for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.